All right. Our next case this morning is Booth versus Home Depot, case number 206074. Mr. Hammonds, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge Mathis and members of the court. My name is Mark Hammonds. I represent the appellant, Jeffrey Booth. Jeffrey Booth had worked as a service manager for Home Depot for approximately 3 years prior to his termination on April the 4th of 2019. On April the 1st and 2nd of 2019, he had reported to his manager, the person involved in the termination, actions of consumer fraud on the part of installers working on a customer's house. He made that report. The supervisor indicated that he did not think there was a problem with overcharging for that particular issue, and then fired Mr. Booth 1 or 2 days after that report took place. Mr. Booth filed a lawsuit in state court, removed to federal court on the basis of the Burke Doctrine in Oklahoma, which allows employees fired for a reason that is contrary to Oklahoma's public policy to secure a remedy if there is no other remedy available as a matter of law. We filed that petition, and the court initially dismissed it on the basis that the fraud statutes and arguments raised in the petition, the court did not think were specific enough to support a Burke tort claim. We thereafter amended and alleged specific references to the Consumer Fraud Act and to the Home Repair Fraud Act, which admittedly covered the very acts that Mr. Booth was reporting. The court proceeded to dismiss the case not based on a failure to allege any factual matter, but based upon the court's determination that claims under the Consumer Fraud Act and the Home Fraud Repair Act did not set forth a public policy that Oklahoma would recognize under the Burke Doctrine. Now, frankly, Your Honor, it's a little bit hard for me to wrap my brain around the idea that Oklahoma's clear public policy does not protect people who report fraud, even in statutes that are less direct and less on point than the Consumer Fraud Act and the Home Repair Fraud Act. Oklahoma has been very clear in its adoption of a rule that reporting fraud or criminal activities is clearly part of Oklahoma's public policy. In the Darrow case, which we cited in our brief, the Oklahoma Supreme Court made it very clear that it's an essential part of public policy to encourage the reporting of criminal activities and to support the reporting of criminal activities.
So in that case, what was the criminal activity being reported?
The primary activity in that case was believed to be Medicare fraud.
Okay, and so that's sort of a broadly hitting fraud that where when you defraud Medicaid or Medicare or something like that, that you're striking at all of the taxpayers, basically, right?
Well, potentially. I mean, not everybody is directly implicated by it, but a whole bunch of people are.
Right. Okay. How about this? What if somebody reported a trespass? That's a criminal activity. If somebody reported that somebody had trespassed on Judge Phillips's property, and next thing you know, they were fired. Do you have the same public policy there? Do you think that swept into a Burke claim?
Not the same public policy. I think Judge Phillips might think it was a matter of public policy to report that. But no, the law does distinguish, Your Honor, and there are some limited cases in which reporting a crime will not support a public policy. The most notable case is the Hayes Eatery case, in which the court said if you report a crime against the victim and the victim fires you, it's their interest. We're not going to say the public policy prohibits that.
Right. Well, I mean, the same. I mean, at some point and some level, though, the crime against Judge Phillips is only against one person. And I guess what I'm trying to get at is these consumer fraud crimes or statutes that you're relying on, they're applied person by person. It's not a situation where, I mean, I guess we could cook up some way they could apply more broadly, but certainly in this case, it's a customer by customer application of the statute and not a situation where if you ding Home Depot for violating the statute in this case, it's reaching out to many people.
Well, that depends, Your Honor. If it is a policy of overcharging for a product that's not actually being installed, then you have more than a person involved. And of course, we allege that the fraud involved customers, not a single customer. But
I mean, also allege though that it only ended up, and I may have this wrong, but that it wasn't a large group of people, that your client's personal knowledge of it was a person or two. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to say that he knew of thousands of people. But to your point,
in that regard, are you relying on Mr. Johnson's statement about basically we catch up later, we can correct this later in other cases? In other words, Mr. Johnson does suggest that this has happened before.
Well, he does, Your Honor, and my client understood it to have happened before. My client, as part of his response to that, said, but we don't ever do that. We don't ever catch up. We never refine clients when we make these kinds of charges.
So you have something. You have something, but do you have any cases that say that's enough as compared to, as Judge Carson is pointing out, obviously much broader public harm with Medicare fraud?
Well, in Medicare fraud, there was broader public harm, but there have been a number of cases. I believe that the Crane case is one, where it was simply said that if you falsify corporate records, that is implicated by public policy and will be a violation. The Reynolds case, although they didn't find a violation there, said that the criminal penalties associated with the Payday Protection Act gave rise to public policy, although that would always be a person-by-person claim. As a matter of fact, many types of fraud are going to occur one at a time. And what's notable about the Consumer Protection Act, as well as the Home Fraud Repair Act, which is part of the Consumer Protection Act, is that there's an extensive remedial system created where the DA can conduct widespread investigations, order declaratory and broad injunctive relief, fine companies for violations, has to make reports about the prevalency of consumer fraud. Now, all of those governmental objectives are thwarted if you can cut off at the root and stop the people who have actual knowledge, that is, the people involved in the business, from making a report and bringing it to the attention of the appropriate people. And it's very chilling to say, you're going to lose your job if you report on this, if you engage in whistleblowing. As a matter of fact, whistleblowing is one of the fundamental factors recognized by the Burke case and by Henson. And whistleblowing almost invariably is on a case-by-case basis. The problem is it doesn't happen once. It happens repeatedly. And the way it happens repeatedly is because we deter the people who have knowledge from making a report. So I think it's very important to say that if an individual knows of even one instance, let alone several instances of fraud, they must be protected in their ability to report that, or the remedial system created by the statute collapses. Because, for instance, I don't know if any of you would be aware what a window treatment is or a window wrap is, and therefore would not probably recognize if you got billed for something that wasn't actually installed on your property. That's the difficulty with consumer fraud cases. The consumer ordinarily does not know that they are the victim of a crime. Someone has to report that who has knowledge of the practice and what's taken place. And there are many instances in Oklahoma law where purely individual wrongs have been the basis for a public policy tort. The Burke case itself, the root of this, recognized a public policy remedy for an employee who claimed that that employee had been denied benefits, commissions, other compensation they were entitled to. They said that's protected by public policy, only requires one victim in order to assert that. That was, by the way, the underlying concept of the Reynolds case. Is there another question that you'd like for me to touch on?
Mr. Hammonds, in Darrow, the Oklahoma Supreme Court cautioned against understanding Burke to mean, and I'm quoting now, any employee allegation of illegal or unsafe employer activity will withstand scrutiny in light of Burke. Why shouldn't that statement give us pause as to your argument here?
Well, I don't think it can be read by itself. It does suggest, as Judge Carson noted, that if you have a single case of trespass, maybe the interests are not broad enough to warrant that. But if you have a report under a statute that is designed to address a wide range of perceived problems affecting the public as a whole, and I think we can agree that the group of homeowners and consumers is a wide swath of the public, and the enforcement of that depends upon bringing information to the appropriate authorities, that is an area where the line clearly falls in terms of public policy, because we are trying to protect not an individual person, but a lot of people from a problem that is perceived as being generally applied. So we've set up a remedial system that includes criminal penalties, and we thwart that system if we don't protect the whistleblower in that case. Well, that's clearly, I think, well beyond the line of those minor, purely personal, purely individualized injuries that may not really have consequence to the public. If we undermine the statute, then we undermine the ability to achieve that public policy goal. And that can only be achieved if we protect people who can make reports. And I note I've got about 2.5 minutes left. I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal if I could.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Tran.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Kim Tran, and I represent the appellee, Home Depot USA, in this case, who I'll refer to as Home Depot. Home Depot respectfully requests that this court deny appellant's motion to certify and affirm the decision of the district court dismissing appellant's wrongful termination claim. Your Honors, appellant alleges he was fired for complaining that a customer had been overcharged. This activity does not involve the general interest of the public and therefore cannot be the basis for a Burke tort. Appellant's complaint.
Ms. Tran, do you agree that Mr. Booth's report to Mr. Johnson alleged home repair fraud under the two statutes here, the Oklahoma Consumer Protection Act and the Home Repair Fraud Act?
I think that, Your Honor, I believe that that issue doesn't really matter. It's not dispositive on the issue.
Well, okay. Whether it matters or not, was the alleged conduct covered by those statutes?
One could argue yes. Ultimately, though, the harm involved is not a harm to the general public.
Well, don't those statutes, they both contain criminal provisions. They grant enforcement authority to the state attorney general and district attorneys. Why doesn't that show that Oklahoma does have a clear public policy against home repair fraud?
Well, I would say that this case is a bit similar to the Culp v. Reynolds case, Your Honor, which also had, in that case, the employee was fired for attempting to help another employee report sexual harassment. sexual harassment is something that we could probably say is against public policy. There is a remedial scheme for reporting sexual harassment. The EEOC is allowed to investigate. Their Oklahoma administrate the OADA, their state law against sex discrimination. There's a whole list of provisions of investigation of a remedial measures, but it's to protect the rights of an individual. And that was the problem in that case that the court had. The court said that, yes, in terms of crimes, the indirect victim of all crimes is the general public. But the victim in that case was that particular employee that had been sexually harassed or assaulted. Here, yes, the Oklahoma Consumer Protection Act provides some sort of remedial scheme for the attorney general to come in, and had the appellant could have, I suppose, reported this issue to the attorney general to attempt to conduct an investigation, the investigation still would have related to whether or not this specific customer was overcharged. Now, Mr. Hammonds pointed out that there could be, you know, you could see a scheme of this happening. You could also see that with respect to a sexual harassment case too, where the EEOC, in trying to support its case, sees what is kind of a practice, a policy and practice of harassment, right? But at the end of the day, what we're vindicating is the right of an individual, the right of one person, not the right of the general public. So this is very different than what we saw in Darrow, which your honors noted, which was Medicare fraud, which implicates everyone in general. And the Oklahoma cases have talked about what really constitutes public harm. Public harm often includes health, safety, welfare, public property, and public monies. So with Crane case was about the insurance industry, and the insurance industry as a whole is kind of quasi-public. It's heavily regulated. That's very different than a private company and a private entity. And when we're talking about the rights implicated there, because of the way that the insurance industry as a whole is managed and overseen by the state government, any sort of improper insurance practices does implicate the general public.
Let me ask you about Home Depot, which is obviously a big company and it does a lot of business. It's not just doing one widow's windows on the side. And what the allegation is from Mr. Booth is that when he complained about this, his supervisor, Mr. Johnson, responded, he saw no problem with what had been done and explained that he felt it was acceptable to overcharge the customers, plural, at the beginning of a project in the event the project ended and going over budget. And then Booth, of course, responds, they never get a refund and he's out the door. Isn't that word customers important? It sounds like maybe that's just the practice of Home Depot, at least at that location, to overcharge, and maybe if someone complains to refund, but otherwise we'll just pocket it. That's what I read.
Yes. So even if we assume that the complaint was about several customers, and we don't know, of course, how many this would have involved or how many Mr. Booth had personal knowledge of, it still comes down to the rights of those individual customers, not a harm placed on the general public with respect to health, safety, welfare, public property, and public money. For example, with, I believe, the Vanerson versus Oklahoma State Board of Regents, where the employee complained about two things, about an improper policy related to improper investigation related to stolen televisions, and then the unlawful transfer of state property. Again, these floor tiles, state property implicating state funds, implicating a harm to the general public. It's not about, that was probably one instance of floor tiles. That could have been one floor tile. That still implicated a harm to the general public because of the source of that tile was state property. Here we're talking about even if it's one customer or 10 customers, just as with sexual harassment, even if it happens to one employee versus 10 employees, Those are the rights of those individual people. That's not a harm to the greater good. Even though we want to make it sound that way, that's not public health, safety, welfare, or public property and funds. Moore versus Oklahoma State University. Again, the employee complained about being directed to open a second bank account, which she believed was unauthorized and violated fiscal policy. That there was a Burke tort there because the origins of that policy was Oklahoma State Constitution, state agencies, the account, the dollars, those were audited by the state, fiscal integrity by the state. That all comes down to state monies. The improper use of state monies is a harm to the general public.
Counsel, I just keep coming back to these statutes. If they establish a clear public policy for Oklahoma forbidding home repair fraud, why doesn't that resolve this case?
Because the harm, again, is not to the general public. It's a harm to a specific individual. We still have to look at what action was being alleged. Burke comes down to kind of two types of actions, one where you're refusing to act in violation of public policy, and one where you're performing an act consistent with public policy, and that the harm in general that we're talking about, the harm has to be against the public. This is a very narrow line of cases, a narrow exception to the rule, and we can't just say that in every instance, simply because this statute works, it's a proclamation of public policy, that it always works. I think a good example of this is the Vasek case, Vasek versus Board of County Commissioners v. Noble County versus Griffin v. Mullinex. In both of those cases, the plaintiffs tried to use the Oklahoma's OSHA Act in support of their Burke tort. In Vasek, it was allowed because the Vasek case dealt with a plaintiff who was a county clerk exposing mold in a courthouse. And that specific statute carved out the ability for, had a whistleblower provision that mirrored the Whistleblower Act. And that was basically the employer there, the public entity, was preventing that employee from exercising this right that was inside this specific act designed for public employers. But the Griffin v. Mullinex case said that this act did not apply for the purposes of a Burke tort with respect to private employers. So just because the statute may have some sort of compelling public policy about it doesn't mean it's always applicable in every circumstance. You still have to look at the activity involved and the specific articulation of the statute in that instance.
Are you saying that there has to be some damage to the public fisc, for example? Is that the dividing line?
I am saying some sort of damage to health, safety, public property or funds, something beyond that. I mean, in all of these cases, when you look at them, they deal with health and safety issues. They deal with public money issues. There are no issues that deal with just an individual person or an individual person's money. Like in Hayes v. Eatery, it was not just that they were reporting the employer's money being embezzled. It was reporting one entity's money, right? That the employer being hurt in that case, that was not a harm to the general public. That was a harm to one entity, right? That was a private harm. So it's not about that this was it comes down to whose harm are we talking about here, right? Martin v. Weyerhaeuser, the internal whistleblower claim was based on unlawful environmental practices. Environmental practices affect everyone, right? Darrow v. Integris, those medical billing errors implicated Medicare. King v. Berry Hill, that was the reporting of a live burning exercise of arson. Arson is a criminal act that implicates the public welfare and safety. Burning of one structure potentially burns other vast numbers of structures. Arson is very different than consumer protection.
Do you concede that this is at least an open question in Oklahoma? In other words, if this had gone to the top court in Oklahoma, they would have had something to talk about?
I do concede that there is nothing in Oklahoma law that has stated that the Oklahoma Home Repair Fraud Act or the Oklahoma Consumer Protection Act is sufficient compelling public policy to support a verdict tort. So yes, had this been certified at the district court level, there would be something to talk about. Yes, I don't think that that's necessary to do so now.
And not that you need to, but you oppose the certification, right?
Yes, I do.
You did. You did and you do.
Yes, I did and I do. I oppose it because it doesn't save any time, energy, or resources at this stage. The court now has the wherewithal.
Well, counsel, if it's an open question, it might provide an important clarification of Oklahoma law.
Yes, it might do that, but this court can decide the issue on whether or not a private or a public harm, whether or not the activity that was alleged is a private or a public harm, whether or not those statutes are sufficient in and of themselves to support a Burke tort claim is kind of a separate issue.
Let me ask you from a slightly different direction. Why isn't harm to the consuming public a public harm?
Again, it's very similar to Colt v. Reynolds with the sexual harassment. Why is the harm? Why is an individual who was sexually harassed or a group of women in a company who was sexually harassed not a public harm? Right. We're still vindicating the rights of those individuals. And in this case, the attorney general, if they were involved for whatever reason, would be vindicating the rights of those individuals.
Did you discuss Reynolds in your brief? I just did a quick check. I didn't even see you address it.
Colt v. Reynolds, I believe I did.
Did you? I may have missed it. I apologize, but I was looking for it and I just didn't see that.
The Colt case, I believe, was addressed.
Okay. Page 17.
Sorry, I misspoke.
Oh, thank you, Judge Carson. It looks like my time is almost up. So because the appellant cannot identify a clear and compelling policy goal which was violated by his termination and the activity performed did not involve the general interest of the public, Home Depot respectfully requests that this court affirm the trial court's decision in its entirety. Your Honors, thank you for your time and consideration today.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hammonds, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Attempt to equivalate this case to reporting sexual harassment fails because one of the essential elements of the Burke Doctrine is that there is no adequate remedy provided for the person who's making the report. The Oklahoma Anti-Discrimination Act, as well as the provisions of Title VII, give a remedy to people who are fired for opposing sexual harassment. That can never be a Burke tort. That is not analogous at all to that. In the Griffin versus Griffin case and the Vasek case were based on different statutes, one of which applied to the state, the other of which was only a federal statute, which cannot give rise to Oklahoma's public policy. It wasn't decided based on the fact that one was a state entity. The Oklahoma Supreme Court has, as I've mentioned, recognized claims that are based on nothing more than an injury to an individual person. That's what they did in Burke. They have recognized claims that are based on nothing more than a violation of criminal statutes involving private property. That's what they did in Gabler versus Holder and Smith, cited in the brief. Virtually every state that has considered the Consumer Protection Act, which is a model act, has held that it is an expression of public policy, and many of the states who recognize Burke-type claims have said that it will support a Burke claim. There's ample evidence in terms of other jurisdictions' interpretation of that act, and by the way, Oklahoma looks at that situation when they make determinations of public policy. So what they're saying is because it only affects one person, they say, you cannot bring an action which might uncover that, in fact, it's a widespread and broad public policy. You cut it off at the root. Now, that's beneficial to only one entity, and that's Home Depot. It is detrimental to the implication and the protection of the state's policy and the state's consumers. We ask for reversal.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate this morning's arguments. The case will be submitted, and counsel are excused.